So today we have a not visiting speaker, Nikhil Prakash. So Nikhil is actually one of is a very unusual case for a PhD student
Go
because
ahead.
because when he arrived, sort of his first month here, we sat down, we chatted about what kinds of things he was interested in studying, and we looked at a whole variety of different things. And he pretty quickly says, you know, that right there, this topic is interesting to me. What is that? Theory of mind, right? Do these AI systems that we're building, do they think like humans? Do they look at other agents and think about what they're thinking? Do they have a theory of mind? Can they put themselves in the shoes of others? That's what I'd like to study. And so he started working on it right away. But from the beginning, it was like challenges. Like the models that were available his first year, they had no theory of mind. We've had some papers about this, right? Like they couldn't do it at all. And so it's taken a few years to get to the point where models maybe credibly have some evidence of even having this. But the interesting thing and the thing that makes them unusual is that if I look at him now, a few years later, oh, he's like working on the thing that he said that he was going to work on. And so today he's not going to talk about a theory of mind paper, but
Wait,
he's,
no, it's
but
theory.
it's very closely related. It's very closely related.
Please.
It's binding, right? Which is the large aspect of the theory of mind task. And he's looking at an interesting setting. There's not language models, and so now I think that he also is going to do the talk in an unusual way because are you?
No,
No, you're not. Okay.
no.
I because so I've been asking him to practice his sort of talk technique and trim down his talks to really short, really polished, to the kind of like more formal presentations. And I thought, well, maybe he'll practice that today, but it sounds like he's not going to practice that today. So we'll see. But welcome, Nikhil.
Well, yeah, thank you for that great introduction. Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, so I had prepared the slides by yesterday, but then and I had a chat with David about the slides, and he gave me a lot of feedback, and I just couldn't incorporate all of the feedback in like 3, 4, 5 hours. That's the if effectively that's the time that I had. So I started making the changes in the slide, but in the middle, I figured out I won't be able to complete it. I mean, the kind of quality that I think you were trying to push me towards, that was too much for me to get in 3 or 4 to 5 hours.
Okay.
So I did a few changes. In fact, you might see that there might be significant difference between the quality of slides, like the earlier slides versus later slides. But hopefully, I think I should be able to explain the ideas and the main results from the paper still clearly. I think that's the main goal here. So I think, yeah, so this is still gonna be our normal conversation kind of presentation, not like a formal polished presentation. So feel free to interrupt me and ask as many questions as you want. Okay. Yeah, so this is basically the title of the paper, The Dual Mechanisms of Spatial Reasoning in VLMs. This is under review right now at ICML. Let's see what happens. I'll start the presentation by actually describing this idea or concept of variable binding. Yeah, I think David briefly mentioned about it, that this paper is about binding as well. It's, I think, a very old idea. I think it's an idea which is older than most of us. People have been talking about in neuroscience and Cox science for last at least 3 decades that I've known of. And the idea is actually pretty simple and fundamental. It's just the ability to associate features of an object. So now, right now, you're seeing a lot of people, and most of us are wearing different color t-shirts or sweaters. And you can figure out that, okay, the color of the t-shirt that this person is wearing is this color. And you're not confusing between the colors of different people. And the reason that you are able to do that, that's because your mind is able to do or is able to solve the binding problem. So essentially the binding problem is basically to associate features of an object and keep it separate between different objects. So for instance, in this particular slide, this is a nice photo of a horse wearing a fedora and a cat wearing a cap. Now, if any intelligent system, be it human brain or a neural model, if we say that that system has variable binding capability, what I mean is it can sort of take that image and then create this list of a set of tuples where each tuple is actually representing an object and its corresponding feature. Yeah, if a system can do that, then we say that the system has a variable binding capability. Why do we care about variable binding in spatial reasoning? Because I would argue that this is one of the fundamental properties that any system need to have to be able to do spatial reasoning. So, for instance, if you give this particular image to a neural model to generate a caption, and let's say it creates this caption which describes the image, I would argue that to be able to represent or generate that caption coherently, it needs to do variable binding in its internal thinking process. If it cannot do variable binding properly, then the caption that it's gonna generate is more likely be incorrect. And even if it's correct, it's something that is not really trustworthy. So that's why variable binding is an essential skill or essential task for any system to do spatial reasoning. In fact, number of previous works have shown that the limited spatial capability of VLMs can be attributed to their restricted variable binding capabilities. Okay, so variable binding seems very important for spatial reasoning. Then the question comes up, the main question that comes up, at least for us, the MacIntyre people, is can we better understand it in the visual space in the hope that maybe we can probably improve the model performance as well with the better insights of how the models are actually forming those tuples in its internal activations. Before going into the VLM space, actually people have looked into this problem in the language model space, and I'm first going to describe what we already
You're so humble. People have looked into it. I wonder who people.
So some of those contributions have been from our lab as well.
From who? Who's the
Okay, from me.
lab?
So let me first describe what we already know about this variable binding in the language model space, and then maybe we can start thinking about and talking about the same problem in the vision space. So assume this is the task that you see on the slide. You have a context, something like apple is in box A, banana is in box B, cheese in box C, and then you ask, or you just have a query sentence, box A contains the, and the answer should be apple. Pretty simple, right? And what previous or some of my works have shown is the way models, or especially language models, solve this task is by first creating some kind of like abstract ordering representation for each kind of important token that you have in the prompt. Okay. Abstract ordering representation and each kind of important token in the prompt. Those are the two main key terms in what I said. So essentially what that means is here in this particular prompt, I would say that there are two main types of important tokens. First is the object, and the second one is the box label. Now, what the model does is it basically creates a label for each of these two type of information. So for Apple, since it's the first one in the prompt, it says that okay, this is the first object in the prompt, and A is the first label in the prompt. Similarly, for banana, it says that, okay, this is the second object, and B is the second label. So it creates this abstract representations to encode important information which is present in the prompt. And then finally, when you ask a question or some kind of features about a particular label or particular box, what it does is basically uses that ordering information to fetch its corresponding features that it will predict as the next token, where in this case, the feature would be actual object which is present in that box.
Nikhil, I have a question. I'm online. Sorry. Can I ask now or should I wait till the end?
Oh, go
No,
ahead
you.
now. Go ahead now. Just
Okay.
it's okay.
So my question was, so in this case, like the structure of the sentence is such that it has like this very constrained structure, right? Where you have, word followed by is in box, and is in box is identical, in all the three segments, and then you have kind of these labels that come up. So, do you think that even if we didn't have this constraint structure and, if the sentence was pretty free-flowing, that semantically similar elements would still share this ordering ID? Like the model would, like, is the model doing this based on like some kind of semantic similarity between these components, or is there like some other reason for why these, for why these IDs exist?
So I think for the first question, if so the question was for a given like freeform text, would we expect to see similar kind of ordering IDs or not? I think my intuition is I think we would still see these kinds of ordering ID. But the problem there is since those are like general text, it will be more difficult to actually prove that they are indeed there. I mean, we can still do like causal experiments to say that okay, they are present there, but in that case, the process of coming up with the causal experiments would be way more difficult because there would be way more confounds. Yeah, I think, but my general intuition is that even in the freeform text, the model does create this kind of ordering ID representation. Because I think we have seen this kind of representation across bunch of settings now, even though most of those settings are still synthetic, kind of still in a sense synthetic. But I think we have seen this kind of representation now across bunch of tasks, bunch of settings, which kind of give me the confidence that okay, this is a generic thing. It's not just constrained to this kind of synthetic setting.
Yeah, okay, awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah, I think Yuav's work also is probably like relevant here, maybe. Like, he also had these similar findings across many, many tasks, but they were all again synthetic. So,
Yeah, even yeah, so the task that he used, I think he that those were more or less synthetic as well. I don't think so they had general text.
yeah, cool. Thank you.
We did see generalization to like the big data set, which is much less. So, we, like, even if you can't find them in a complex setting, you can show generalization to them.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, depends what you call synthetic or not. The belief tracking was also not super synthetic. Yeah, but this mechanism is clear. So that was the language model space. Now let's talk about the
What if you have more than one object?
Yeah, good question. I'm not super sure what will that have. What will that do? What do you think? Yeah, I'm not 100% sure. Yeah.
Expect both of them to have the same mark and odd mark.
But then
But
how?
it's not an order, something else.
So it's going to still be like the first object?
Yeah, I think both are gonna, it's gonna be counted as one object. That's what I,
But then
First.
the query in Google will be, what is the object inside box A that starts with A or something like that? Like if you target a specific one. Yeah, but I think it should be a different one.
Yes, it should be. Yeah, it shouldn't be exactly same. There should be some difference, but
No, but for box A contains B, I
box A
think
contains.
it will be the same, more or less the same marker for F1, for the entire thing. No, it decides about the marker before it sees the query. It decides about the markers before it sees the query.
Yeah, but I would guess it creates different markers for usage.
Yeah.
I think Andrew from Martin's lab had a word a follow-up word for you that yours that shows that there are different markers that the model
Oh, he has a paper on
creates
this? I've not seen that paper.
later.
Is it out now?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, I've not seen that paper. Okay, yeah, if you can send that, would be really helpful. What is getting binded to what?
Is the box getting bound to the apple? The apple is getting bound. The apple can't be bind box because it
Really?
gets the future. Then should it will say we can influence the apple.
Oh, you asked about the, that there is no apple.
No, let me get the template. You ask me what's going on at work. Why not that? Because they actually study the organization one to one. So now I have become mentor. One thing is that how do we handle that? Up until everyone, how you have that, then we'll see something similar happen the morning.
Nikhil, wouldn't you say that your diagram suggests, because you call it IDs, that what you're showing here is that no, neither one, they're both being bound to number one. They're not. It's not apples being bound to A or A is being bound to apple. They're being bound to this ID, right?
There's an indirect binding happening through the ID.
The principle the finding that happens. Is it more like a pointer? It is.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but it's more like a pointer, but there's still the question of many to one binding, where let's say we have multiple objects, like multiple objects in a single box, how that would be binded is something that I'm still not very sure. Okay, we can move forward. So there was the existing results in the language model space. Now let's talking about the VLM results. So before we get into the results, I just wanted to brush up on the architecture of a VLM. It's actually simple. So there are primarily two components, or actually three components. There is a vision encoder and a projector on top of the vision encoder. And then finally, we have a language model backbone. So the image is first broken down into smaller patches. Each of the patch becomes a specific token, which is fed into the vision encoder, which is just VID. It processes those token information. And then output of each of the token is basically given to the projector, which is supposed to transpose the those vision encoder into language model space. And then those transformed vision encoder, vision embedding are actually passed on to the language model just as normal token embedding, in addition with the token embeddings from the text. That's it. And then finally, the language model predicts the next token in the text domain. Yeah, so there was this paper last year, which show that the kind of mechanism that I showed for the language model in the last slide actually generalizes to VLMs as well. though they only studied the language model backbone, but they show that this the same kind of mechanism actually generalizes that setting as well. So just to it.
Sorry, but they only show like what's happening on top of the text documents. They didn't say anything about the visual text.
So they have just one experiment,
They say that the information comes from the visual.
but they do one experiment on the key vectors of visual tokens. Yeah, it's so they don't say it as clearly as I'm gonna explain it to you, but I think based on what I've explained to you in the language setting and based on their result, I think we can infer that. Okay, so essentially this is what happens. So yeah, the image gets passed on from vision encoder and the projector. And then in the language model, in the language model backbone, they have shown that the model creates this ordering ID for, let's say, both horse and cat, as well as fedora and cap in the visual token residual string. And then when we ask about cat is wearing a, and the answer should be cap, the language model basically fetches the ordering ID of the cat, which is 2, from the vision token to the cat token residual stream. And then it passes on that piece of information to the last token, the A token, which is used to again fetch in the corresponding object ordering ID. And then finally, the model uses this object ordering ID to actually fetch its value, the cap, which is actually the final prediction as the answer.
That rectangle represents text for from something in the left side.
How does we know that if this rectangle represents a cat? How? I'm not saying that if it could be representing anything. But let's say, so when we break down the image into smaller patches, let's say the last patch, which has some region of the cat, will have this ordering ID. Okay, even that's not, I don't think so they explained that in that paper. I think in that paper, in their paper, they just had like shapes which can be covered with a single token
Single patch.
by single batch. So if you have an object which is spread across multiple patches, then I think things become a little bit more complicated. But I think we can say that at least the last token of that the last patch of that particular object should encode this ordering ID in the language model space.
It's the same as Rome, basically. Kind of like the last entity of the like the last token of the entity encodes.
Kind of like that.
Interesting that it's the same in your
But here the patches are not sequential. Like a cat can be some rectangles and then something else and then
That's right. That's right. There could be a lot of space in between.
yes.
Though they don't show it in the paper. This is my understanding and a little bit of our experiment. Okay, but so this is what.
I have another question. So you're saying that each patch then is associated directly with an object and the object is not spread across multiple patches in the data sets that you're using in this experiment?
In the paper that I'm talking about.
Oh, in
So
the
this.
paper that you're talking about.
Yeah,
Okay,
so
got it.
in this particular paper. Okay, so yeah, basically the same story in the VLM setting. But I think there are still many questions that remains unanswered. So I think this is one of the first questions that we study in this paper, which is where does the ordering ID get formed? Is it in the language model backbone itself, where we have already some evidence that it is present there? Or maybe it is not getting generated in the language model. It is actually getting generated in the vision encoder and is being passed on to the language model backbone. Okay, so that's like one of the questions that we study. Another question that we study is how are they represented? Is it actually localized, or is it diffused across tokens? When I say it, I mean, yeah, okay, I mean the ordering ID. And again, so we know that ordering IDs are present in the language model backbone. So can we better characterize them? I mean, what kinds of representation are they? Are they encoding like a relative, sort of like a relative position, or are they encoding more like an abstract position, like this is the two coordinates in the image, or is it like the first object in the image? So those are the three main questions that we study. And I think it will become more clear, I think, as I move, as I show the result and the experimental setups. Okay. Yeah, so we studied this four settings. Three of them are synthetic, and one is actually coming from a real benchmark. The first one is actually the simplest one, where we generate these squares of equal sizes but different colors. They are either spread horizontally or vertically. Here, I'm only showing the horizontal one, but we have settings where the squares and the shapes and the objects are spread vertically. And the question that we ask is, so let's assume the square, this particular square example, square image example. So for this particular square, we could ask, what is the color of the square to the left of the green square? Or the color of the square to the left of green square is, and the answer should be red. That's basically the task. And we study two models, Qwen and Gemma models, and both the models can do this task perfectly. Okay, so that was the setup. Now we are starting to get into the experimental setups or the experiments that we did in the paper. Now, the first thing that we did was to actually cross-check if the VLM is again using this ordering ID information to solve this task or not. Even though the previous work has already shown that but that was for a different task. So we wanted to confirm that this particular result actually generalizes to our setting or not. So for that, we did an patching experiment, which is pretty simple actually. So we have this two samples. The first one is the clean sample, where the answer to the question is red, and for the sample on the right, the answer to the question is black. Okay. The other major difference between these two samples are, in the first sample, the first square is the correct answer. And in the second sample, the third square is the correct sample. Okay. And we are doing the intervention at the last text token, which is in this particular setting. So we are taking the residual vector at the ace token from the counterfactual run and pasting it onto its corresponding location and layer in the clean run. And then checking how does the final output change. And we are expecting that if a particular layer is encoding the ordering ID information, when that layer is patched from the counterfactual run to the clean run, the final output of the clean run should change from red to blue. Does that make sense? I have just spoken a lot of words. Okay. So we did that experiment, and this is the result. We see that in the later-ish layer, something after layer 20, we do see that the last token is encoding this ordering ID representation, and if we patch that from the counterfactual to the clean run, we get blue color as the final output.
Nikhil, can you explain this again? Like, why would you not expect the color to be black? Like, why would you expect it to be blue? Like, when you're doing this patching?
Okay, so idea here is we are
Wait. Would you expect it to be black?
I don't know. Like I feel like it should be black. Yeah, I do expect it to be
Right?
black.
That's reasonable. It should be black.
Didn't your figure in the next slide show that at the lighter layers it does start giving black? Yeah, like so.
Yeah, so you guys, yeah, you already have partial answer. I mean, you, yeah, almost have the answer. So essentially what the model does it at the last token, it first forms this ordering ID information of the correct square, which it needs to predict as the next token. And once it has formed that ordering ID information, then it uses that piece of information to actually fetch the feature associated with that square that it needs to answer. So in this case, in this task, the feature is the color of that square. So in the later-ish layer, after it has formed the ordering ID, it actually uses it to fetch the color of that square. And hence, in further later layers, we see black color as the final output.
Oh, so wait, sorry. So if I understand correctly, both the feature information as well as the ordering information is encoded in that representation you're using to patch, but the ordering information from the representation is recovered earlier, like before the feature information.
Yes, you can say that. So model is first forming the ordering information and then using it to fetch the feature information at further layers or later layers.
So could would this be like a correct, very high level understanding of like what this represents? Like around layer 20, when that blue peak is happening, it's forming like the index to look up, but it's not actually doing the lookup yet. So when you patch right at those layers, you intervene on like the location that is looking up before it actually retrieves the value there. Okay.
That's exactly good. That's 100% correct. Oh, you had a question.
Yeah, so what exactly did you patch? Is this the MLP output or something?
This is just residual vector.
Was it true?
Okay, so from this experiment, we can say that even for this particular task, the VLM is using this ordering ID information to solve the task. Okay, so now coming to our first, like one of the main questions that we study in this paper, which is to understand where exactly this ordering ID information is getting generated in the VLM.
I have a question. You look at varying colors themselves, like just seeing, this should be an invariant. So if we change to like, orange, blue, and brown, like.
Yes, I think I should have mentioned it. So this graph that you see is actually averaged over 50 samples. Yeah, I think we should mention that. It's yeah, and those 50 samples have various different combination of colors. So it's not really specific to this particular samples. And yeah, so results are actually averaged over a bunch of samples with different colors.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So you did residual
Uh-huh.
thing.
Uh-huh.
Do you also look at any specific mechanism like does this
Space does.
where patch you get 100% where like I see that it's like 80%.
Which this is nothing intervention like this, right? It's the
But even that, I would say maybe there are some information in previous token, one or two previous token, like square token might have some information about the ordering ID, which we are not really patching upon. Maybe that still holds the ordering ID of the left square, and that's why we're not seeing super high intervention.
well, you know more than this. I mean, when you get to the end of the paper, you're going to say that instead of saying maybe, you're going to say, oh, there is more than one mechanism.
Oh, so why we are not seeing this?
100%
Yeah, 100%
for
here.
this one mechanism.
Yeah.
It's because there's more than one
No,
mechanism.
but this is the end of both the mechanism. So
Oh,
both the mechanism have already
they
combined.
both come
Yeah,
together?
yeah, yeah.
Oh, I
This
see.
is almost the end of the process.
Okay. So
So
the end is merged. It's
the end is
not.
merged.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, end is almost merged. This is almost the end of the computation.
Yeah, so it's like if the thing that you're patching in is indeed this like the right side index.
Then
Like if you
what?
cleanly patch it, then you should probably get it all the time.
Yeah, so my guess is maybe we are there is some information maybe diffused over some other tokens that we are not patching upon,
I
and
see.
that's why we're not seeing a completely high intervention effect.
So might be because the gap between SageWorld and SageMath is so small. So it tries to be, but there is overlap between where the ordering representation is affected and the value of representation. So basically what we see when we see the blue peaks, it's already overlapped with the gap.
Yeah.
It's the two mechanisms of
Yeah, that's also a point.
and also like since it captured the ID and it has to go look for it. Can we say that most of this happens in attention?
Yeah, we can say that. Yeah. Yeah, in this work we don't look into our attention heads, but yeah, I think previous works.
We clean our eyes.
I'm not sure if you would get better performance, like better effect just by patching in the heads. It One point is what Tamar said. Maybe because of that, you might see, but I'm not 100% sure about that.
Yeah, if it's different heads doing the value
Yeah,
patching and the
then
ordering.
you might get better, slightly. Yeah.
But we do hypothesize that it's very similar, the loop back overall. Like
Right. Yeah, it
it's
looks like
basically a
it.
loop back.
Yeah.
Okay, so where are these ordering ID information are getting formed? So the first experiment that we did was actually probing experiment. We asked this question of whether the vision token embeddings, which is fed into the language model backbone, if they already contain this ordering ID information or not. And what we do is we take the representation of or the embedding of each of the square tokens and basically just train a linear three class classifier on top of those representations. We use like 90 samples for training and 30 samples for testing, and the probe accuracy was almost perfect. So this in a sense shows that the ordering information is already present in the vision token embedding, which is fed into the language model. However, this was the most interesting result. So what we did was so we trained the probe only on the square token, like the embeddings corresponding to the square token. But now once we have the probe, we can basically apply the probe to every visual token embedding. So that's what we did. We took the probe. We applied it on each of the patch or its corresponding embedding, and this is the result that we get. What we found was, for the probe that was trained to find the ordering information of the first square, it has a good effect, or it has a good probing accuracy on the test set on entire strip which is actually covering that square. So this is where the square is supposed to be, somewhere here. But we found that this ordering ID information is actually spread across this entire strip. Yeah, question.
Actually, experiment.
Okay. So yeah, so this is the image. Okay. We break down the image into individual patches. Those individual patches become the tokens, which is fed into the VIT. And then the projector, and then we have this embeddings which are fed into the language model backbone. We took those embeddings which are fed into the language model backbone corresponding to the square tokens only. So we know that which like the 100th token corresponds to the first square, 200 token corresponds to the second square. So we only picked up 100, 200, and 300 vision tokens. Okay.
But what is special with those tokens?
Because those corresponding to those are the ones for the square tokens. Those are the ones which is encoding. square.
So one part was one.
You can physically point to it.
You took it from the image.
That's how we created the image.
Okay.
So we created the image. We have full control of where we can put the square in the image. So we put it in a specific position in that image so that when we break it down, it actually corresponds to the 100th token which gets generated. Okay.
And then what's the form?
Yeah, so the once you have this 100, 200, and 300 active like token embedding, then the 100th one corresponds to like the first square, 201 corresponds to the second square, and 300 corresponds to the third square. That's what the probe is tasked to classify.
Square is in the size of fetch.
Square is, now we are talking about vectors. This is embedding.
It's square. When you say square, I'm not sure if you're talking
Yeah,
about.
there's so many squares all over this diagram. So you have to
Okay.
kind of, I think that it might be helpful to actually
So
point out
this
choose different shape.
so this is a vector here now.
Which
This
one?
is this is
That's not a square. That's a vector.
that's a vector. This is a vector. Yeah, this is a vector.
Okay. So is square the left?
Which one is a square? That's a square.
This is, when I say square, I mean this square. This, no,
Only
this
one.
is only one.
Well, it just happens to be. It could have been. I mean, so like, okay.
That's on the
Oh,
design.
sorry. Yeah, we have four vector. Sorry, but for understanding, let's say there is only one
Well,
vector.
no, actually, if I understand, it might be clear. If you, there's four patches that cover that square.
Okay, let's say, yeah. In technical, in actual terms, there are like four vectors corresponding to each of the red, green, and blue square. Okay.
And the fog, what's it?
So, okay, so now you have 4, 4, 4, 12 vectors. You got that? So for the first four vectors corresponds to the first square.
That's the ground truth label of them. Yes.
The next four square correspond to the second one, and the last one correspond to the third one. Essentially, that's what the probe is trying to classify. We feed each of these 12 vectors in the probe, and the probe is supposed to give me 1, 2, 3.
And then you use the same probe to see
Yeah.
other vectors.
Yeah, exactly.
So is it one probe for all horizontal, vertical
No,
coordinates?
horizontal is one. I mean, so this is a three class classifier.
Yeah.
So we basically have like three vectors.
That makes sense. So you the same image, if you flip it, you can still use the same probe, right? Because the token dimensions, everything is same.
No, I think we trained a different one.
It
It might work that it might work that the horizontal work might be able to work in the vertical work, but I don't think so. We tried it.
might be more convincing that it's positionally, like relative positionally. Okay. That probe.
Yeah, that is
It looks like the from the voting server is just queued into like the positional coding of the token, not necessarily like the semantic relationship between the
could
squares.
be literally the X and Y, is what you're
Yeah.
saying.
Yeah.
It should be like
Yeah.
that. Yeah.
But you have some of the results that show that it's more.
Yeah, but sorry, why do you think it's X and
Yeah,
Y?
because
Heat map.
from the heat map, it just looks like what the signal the probe has queued into is just the positional coding of the token from the VIT encoder.
When you say
That,
position, you mean X and Y coordinates.
yeah,
X
just the X and Y coordinates.
and Y.
Yeah. It's not necessarily like the, because it seems like what you're after is like the
So wait.
semantic relationship or like the orderings of like
So
the square.
the counter for that argument is you think the X and Y of this particular square is isn't the X and Y coordinate of this particular square or this particular patch is at the same distance at some square here.
No, the X is different.
But the distance, if you look at,
Just the X.
so it has picked up X.
Yeah.
But
So,
we do know now that if you change the
which is
position, if you change the position of this object inside the image, it does generate.
What did you?
So if you
Do you
take
have
it,
that experiment somewhere in
yeah,
your slides?
but yeah, I do have that experiment.
Sorry.
I'm gonna go through that, but I'm still not sure
Hey,
about that
why don't
part.
you flip to it now to answer the
Yeah.
question?
Yeah.
Because if you do what Rohit said, which is like flip the horizontal and vertical, and it still generalizes, I'd be like more convinced with it.
Yeah, that I agree with. That makes sense as well.
Show
Really.
the experiment.
You have the probing?
But this is a bit
Ah.
probing? Not the causal one, you have a probing one. I just sent it.
Oh
You
no,
can show
I
it.
did not include
It's
that.
very.
Should I open Discord now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on. You said this interactive, not the formal talk, so here we are.
You guys will see all of our thoughts in
Oh
man, don't. Okay,
that's right.
it's okay.
You
Nobody
started
saw it.
something. If it was a
Okay,
formal
then
talk, then it would be
you got
definitely.
to explain it. You got to explain. Tamar need to explain the experiments.
Okay,
I'm
there's
not.
Discord. We can't see. Well,
Yeah, we
punch
can't
maybe
see.
the
Oh,
Discord.
that's better. You can't see it.
Hide all the sniper comments. That's right.
Only about you.
Only about me, that's
That's
it.
right. That's right.
Yeah.
Especially about. Especially
Especially
about.
about.
Especially about. Reddit's in trouble now.
You make it clever. You copy paste the
Yeah.
Discord.
Oh,
It's not.
it's
Okay, never mind. It's not getting copied.
again.
Okay. And then what should I press?
I see. I can see
It's
you.
all the kids.
It's all the Watch out.
The
Nikhil's behind Nikhil.
Okay,
Watch
I'm changing
out.
my entire screen now. It's okay, it's okay. It's okay. You wanna explain what is this?
Okay, so it trained, it's the same probe, the same as what Natalie asked. So we trained the probe on the squares on the top.
Squares on the top.
And something funny that we saw is that if you try to train the probe on each layer of the vision encoder, it actually you get like 100% accuracy from layer zero because it can overfit to the position embedding, and that's it.
Of vision encoder.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what if you try to train the probe on one image and then test the generalization on another image where the position of the input is different? And what we see if we do that is that we still get a nice accuracy on top of the square itself, but we still see these like strips in the original position.
So the bottom one is gonna jump.
Yeah. Do you have the plot? So here, just look at the blue, green, and orange. So the blue and green is just if you train, and the layer on the top, on the bottom is the vision encoder layers. So here you can see that just from layer zero, you can get nice accuracy if you just train them on the squares or shifted squares. It can get it right. In the orange one, it's actually the other image. So you train on one setting and then test on different locations of the squares. And
Okay.
you can see that it peaks on layer 15, and it doesn't get 100% accuracy, meaning that there is kind of like a mix of information, but some of the information is not the absolute location, but something relative about the order.
So let's say for your training set, the first square is always in token 100.
Yes,
Now,
exactly.
in your test set,
It
it's
can
in
be.
like token 200.
Yeah. Can even be at the location of the third one.
But it's still the first square.
Yeah,
You're not
but it's
shifting the squares, it's
exactly.
just zoomed out or zoomed in
Exactly.
version.
And then I think Nikhil has a nice causal experiment that also validates that it's got happens.
Can you maybe say that and I wasn't confused? What's the input and what's the output of the probe?
The input of the probe is the embedding
The
of
patch,
the
right?
visual tokens, and the output is the order of it, whether it's the first one in the image, the second one in the image, or the third one.
So three label
Yes.
classification. Okay.
Oh, you know what you should do? Like,
Should add another one.
no, the same probe for horizontal, vertical, and like different sizes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So do we have?
No, for training, I mean.
Oh, to see if we
Yeah,
generalize in training.
I think it could.
yeah,
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 yeah, yeah. I
it's
think
all.
I thought that's what you meant initially.
No, I meant that one.
Yeah,
I forgot about the
the
this.
joint one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's a good one. Yeah, we can try
So
that.
what is the training data that where memorize the position again? Is this
Yes, so it's. I think Nikhil will get to it, right? Showing that it's
that and generalization. I'm not sure I
the
understand.
generalization is a mix of probably some of it is actually memorizing the absolute position of the object in the image, but some of it is actually the relative position between the objects. So whether it's the first one, the second one. So if you want to If you want to encode the order of things in your image, it can either be by just looking at the XY coordinate, right?
Yeah, so in your data, your training data, the red one is always in
Yes.
position 100.
Yes.
What's the difference between the samples and the training data?
Colors, different
Oh,
colors.
just
Or
colors.
in the other setting, you could
So the
different
first one is
objects.
always in
Yeah, the
100.
same location.
Okay.
But it does generalize this to different location to some extent.
Different locations in different order.
Different pixels.
Different x and y.
You shift them all
Yeah.
on
Okay.
smaller squares, more tighter together.
Right.
Okay, not sure it's like super related, but I would say like so right now you're training the probe in a very specific way where the squares are always at the same location and you're stress testing and you in different scenarios. I wonder whether things can go another way around. You can actually train a stronger probe by training on
Yeah,
the
more diversity.
distribution of like square positions
Yeah.
and then testing on another distribution.
That's sort of Rohit's second
Yeah.
suggestion,
Yeah.
right?
Oh,
Is that right?
yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. No, you're right. I think that's right. Yeah. So that'd be your data is a regularizer then. Then you're trying to get the generalized data out of it. Yeah.
And sorry, another question would be, I'm really curious about like whether say like it works only on the VIT or QEM which is trained end to end for vision question answering. It works for like Dino or Clip, where I don't know, maybe not Clip, but like Dino, where it's like.
So we didn't study Dino, but the result that I've shown here, they generalize at least to Gemma models. I don't know if Gemma is Clip
Yeah,
or is it?
it's general. I don't know if
Oh,
it's
I think Lava is
Lava is
Lava is Clip. I
separate.
think Lava is what Lava.
Lava is separate. Lava is like using a pre-trained vision
Oh, I
coder.
see. Then I don't know.
Not
But
like a link spot on.
okay, but yeah. So at least the results generalize to Gemma model, and most of the results also generalize to Pixtl.
I see.
But some of the experiments I just still need to do on Pixtl. But so far the experiments that I've done on Pixtl seems to be okay or consistent with the results that we have. Yeah.
Someone asked the like augmentation, regularizing these probes. How can we be sure that it's like one, we're catching the same mechanism? What if there's just, there's a mechanism for taking relative ordering, like horizontal pages that are close to the middle, and like a different one for if it's like near the top of something? You think there's like, yeah, you think there's like a risk of something like that?
When you're training probes, like the kinds of probes that we train, or is it more like training the probes with all different kinds of configuration?
I mean, I guess in general,
Uh-huh.
because it's there's like a range of like how specific versus how generalized the kind of settings that you're training these probes in.
Mm-hmm.
I think, there's something to be considered there with respect to like the underlying mechanisms and how specialized or generalized they can be.
Okay, so my answer to that would be if the mechanism between these two types of like configuration are significantly different, then maybe the training or the test accuracy of those probes will tell you that maybe you're not able to train a very good classifier, like a very good probe. Either in terms of your training law or training accuracy or in terms of your test accuracy. I think that's what I would assume.
Makes sense, yeah. It just feels like it's very hard. Like
Yeah.
it's not grounded. There's no way numbers for this thing. I
Okay,
had
so
another question. Is how similar are these ordering IDs to like the position embeddings of these tokens? I guess in the vision language model, it's probably less useful to look at this, but say in the case of just like the LLM, just like in terms of the words, how similar are the vectors like from just the position embeddings and these ordering IDs?
That image you just showed is. Can you go back to the image you showed from the Discord?
This one?
Yeah.
This one?
No,
This
the
one?
one you were just on. Like my understanding of what this is saying is that like if we try to deduce the algorithm the linear probe is learning, it's learning like a mix of like this is evidence that is just reading off the positional embedding, right? And then this faint little patch here is evidence that there's actual generalization or like relative order. Is that a correct interpretation of results? Okay.
Got it. Thank you.
And
Yeah.
the same problem, that right? The same problem speaking of both.
Yeah, I think it's clearest in like this third image, right? You see this little guy, which definitely
Yeah.
corresponds
Or maybe
to the relative.
the
Yeah,
and
that's
then
fair.
maybe if we trained a Rohit-Shenyu probe, and you could just get that
Yeah.
by itself, right?
Okay, you should name that.
Yeah,
Rohit-Shenyu
Mm-hmm.
probe. I'm willing to share the physics.
cool. Yeah, I hope that, yeah, I think that answers the question. So I guess we
I
can
don't think the question.
I mean I want you to explain to me the figure.
This figure?
Yeah.
Wait, so you understood the probe, right?
Yes.
So we just take that probe. So the probe was trained only on the square tokens. But now we apply the same probe across all the tokens, including the background tokens. And this is the result that we get. This is the test accuracy.
Accuracy or
Test
something else?
accuracy. Yeah, test accuracy of the probe.
The probe.
So assume that you're looking at the first vision token, the first vision token. In our image, that would be something like this, just a blank patch.
Yeah.
White
In
patch.
the training data.
No, that's not in the training data.
So how does the test data look?
The test data just take the
The input for the probe is a token embedding.
Yes.
During training, they only show tokens from the squares exclusively.
the colored
With
squares.
different colors,
Different
right?
colors,
But it's
different.
always the exact same shape.
Always the same. I
No,
don't know
shape.
that.
No. We also have other data set where this is the simple data set of squares. It can be objects, it can be.
For this setting that
Yeah.
we're talking about right
Yeah.
now, the training is these three
Yeah.
squares, just
Yeah.
different colors.
Yeah.
Same
Yes.
difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and then how does the test data look?
The test data loop also includes the embedding of all the tokens in the image.
Oh, but it's still the same
Yes,
shape?
but it's the held out set of images. So
Okay. But it's still
it,
these three.
yeah, but in
Yes.
the ob for example, in the object setting, when you have like tiny images, different object, it will be completely different objects.
But yeah, the same configuration, just different colors. Okay, and then we apply the probe on all the patches, all the tokens corresponding to each of the patches. And then we see that the test accuracy is not only high on the square tokens, which is it is supposed to, it was trained on. We see high test accuracy also on the background tokens. Background tokens, which are sort of like creating a strip around the square which it was trained on.
So it knows to say, no, this is not the first position.
It knows that this is the first position. So if you take that first patch that I was talking about, you take its corresponding embedding and then use your probe, then it will say that, okay, this is the first position. Like this is the first one.
So we have now 200 labels that it can predict.
It's still three labels.
Yeah, labels is still
He's
three.
doing something silly. Like instead
So
of
this, these are
doing,
the labels like this?
Yeah. Okay.
yeah.
Yeah.
So this is first labels are just first square, second square, third square. That's it. This three classifier.
Yeah, I understand. But for the Y1, what is the label? That was my question. What is the gold label for the Y patch?
It doesn't have a
It
label. We
doesn't have
didn't
it.
train on it.
Yeah.
In
Not,
on test time.
we didn't
Yeah.
train on it, and now we say, oh, interesting. But so the ex like something that will be very not surprising will be if the white background will have zero accuracy for all the three probes.
When you
And
say accuracy, what is the gold label of the white background?
accuracy is whether the probe, we have three probes. Each probe is accurate if it predicts the right order. So the first probe predicts first order, right? I'm the first object.
Yes.
Second probe predict under
So
second.
the background, what's the order of the
It
background?
doesn't have order, but it seems like the vision encoder assign an order to the background. Although it doesn't supposed to
So
have.
it's not accuracy.
It is accuracy.
Well, I understand what your question is. What, so okay.
That
So
you
when
get
you give the white
CPR.
patch, when you give the white patch embedding as an input, the output is a softmax of three levels. Whatever the accuracy is for the first token, like the first class, they're plotting that.
Yeah, that's the
So
prediction.
assume that we have, I think I got the
Assuming it's
question.
90% accurate, 90% confident, that's confidence actually. 90% confident that it's coming from class one.
Yeah.
But, so that's
That's
not
good.
accuracy. That's not accuracy, that's
Yeah.
confidence.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's first class confidence. It's
Okay.
very confident that the white patch from above the red
But
square.
maybe what they're showing here is
No,
accuracy.
this is
So
accuracy.
this would
So
be.
let's assume that the ground truth is the first one, is the first square for the first patch.
No,
Yeah,
what
why
you're showing
is
here is you're saying
it?
you're saying accuracy if every patch the ground truth was zero, like for the whole image,
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
right?
Sorry.
That then you're showing accuracy there. That's what, and
Then
then you
that's
have
not
three
accuracy
bases.
because everything has the same label.
Right, but it's just number of predictions.
But the
That's not
only
accuracy.
show the accuracy of the probe, but to show that the background tokens actually contain information relevant to the probe. As if the probe was trained to
Yeah.
predict the background latency.
Right, but I shouldn't treat that as accuracy, but look at it as the probe prediction.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, the word
Predictions.
accuracy was confusing. Okay. It implies there are labels.
Wait, I'm not sure if I follow completely. This you're saying this you're also saying this is not accuracy.
Like flip rate or something. I don't know how to call it.
I think we can find a way to define it, but what we actually care about is what is the prediction of the probe on these tokens.
Yeah, and we check it if it's.
We check it by saying, let's assume all the labels were one. That is
Yes,
the accuracy. Yes.
exactly. So we are checking the accuracy here.
Yeah. Except that there's this objection to
Because.
use the word accuracy when what you're measuring is not whether it's right or not.
Yeah, it's not like
Right?
a test.
Because
Oh,
tests
okay,
normally
okay.
use the word accuracy to talk about you
Okay.
get one if it's right and zero if it's wrong.
It's the same.
And here you're
Yeah.
using accuracy just as units.
Yeah,
Yeah.
accuracy for particular label.
But
So, boy,
that's it.
just define it very well. What's the top? If you do maximum on the soft max, what will be the prediction?
The
Yeah,
predictor.
so
Whether it
like
will be one
90,
or up.
90 times out of 100, the white label has been predicted as class one.
So you might call that prediction rate.
90 out of
Right? Like
prediction
if
rate.
that's 90,
Yeah.
like let's say the accuracy is
Prediction
90.
rate.
Sure.
I don't know what
That
it
sounds like accuracy to me.
not.
Well, but not to other readers, right? So you have to be sensitive to your readers.
Okay, maybe we can change
Yeah.
the wording there. Okay.
Think accuracy implies that
Yeah,
it's
like
good. Oh, sorry.
right. It's like if you have a high accuracy, that's good. But if you have a high prediction rate of something that a white token is predicted to be like the red
Okay, that makes
position,
sense. That makes sense.
that's
Okay.
not.
I think the problem with we're calling this prediction is we didn't expect this prediction. It's not like we tested the hypothesis
It's
of
okay, but still predicting.
yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. That's
We
okay.
Not that
yeah.
you predicted, the model
Yeah.
predicted.
Okay. Yeah. That's good.
Okay.
Yeah, we should have a look up how we all predict.
Okay, but yeah, okay. So the main result, main takeaway is that the ordering information of the square is not concentrated or localized only on the square tokens. It is diffused across background tokens as well.
Can I say it again as if you are really surprised?
Yes, that I said in the start.
As if what? It's a surprise. Like you have objects, they have a certain order inside the image, but now it seems like that order is not associated with the object itself, but kind of like a strip around. Why?
So it means that the probe things,
yeah.
Wait,
that
so
this action on the top is in
the rough is
position
checking
zero,
again.
right? This is the yellow points show that, let's say on the top, the probe predicts this to be in position zero, right?
Yes,
This is what
that's
it
right.
means.
Yeah, this is what it
Correct.
means.
The
Yeah.
prediction rate.
Yes.
Do you have also extensions? The shell.
Yes, that's next
Okay.
part.
Sorry. What do you think
No,
about this?
that's
Like,
tomorrow.
so, like, here's like a formal construction that I'm thinking about in reference to this. If I trained a linear probe on the same classification task, but the only inputs I gave it were the positional embeddings with like maybe like the y value is ablated, if like with the information related to y ablated out.
Like no square, no nothing.
Like
Yeah.
I,
You
for
get the
one,
same.
for the specific task you described, which is not the Rohit version, it would do a perfect job. And then if you actually reproduce this figure, it would look like perfect
You wouldn't.
polyoms, right? So what's like, I don't, what's the evidence that it's not, that your linear probe is not just doing that?
Are you ready for a review?
We should move to the causal experiments.
Okay.
Also, what, just last question, what layer is this on? Some
Just
kind
the
of
embedding of
this is
the
input.
output embedding to the language
The
model.
last layer of the vision model.
It's
After the
after the
ML, right?
projector.
Last layer of the, no,
No,
after the MLP. So it's
after the
already
projector.
projected to
So
language model space.
input to language model backbone.
Even past the last layer of the vision.
Yes.
Just if you can go back, sorry to delay this one a bit more, but
Uh-huh.
to maybe this way, like that objection, if you trained on something like this same data set, but the three squares are kind of on the top, then you would have examples where you have the exact same square, but in this case, it's the second one. And in this case, it's the first one. So it's exactly the same position of embeddings, but it's kind of, you're kind of showing that it's figuring out
Yeah, you also have
the
that.
order.
I think you have just con I think just continue.
Okay. So this is probing result. This shows that, okay, maybe the order information is diffused, or it is at least present across a bunch of different tokens, but we all know that probing only is correlational results. It does not say anything about the causality. The information might still be present there and it might not be used by the model. So we do this intervention experiment to actually show that the information present in that strip is causal in nature. And this is the two experiments that we did. So the difference between clear and counterfactual is that the order of left and right squares are reversed. In the clean one, red is the left one, and on the right, on the counterfactual, the right one is the red one. Okay, so if the model is creating this ordering ID information, then when we do this two patching, the color of the square should remain the same, while the ordering information should get reversed. And because of that reversal of the ordering ID, the final answer of the clean run should change from red to blue. Here we are asking what is to the left of the green color. Okay, so that's pretty much the experiment. And we do intervention on either only the square tokens or on the entire strip tokens,
Including this one.
including the square. So this is the result for patching in the entire strip. X-axis is the embedding layer and the later layers in the language model backbone, and y-axis is, let's say it is pro yeah IIA. So we see that, okay, even when you patch in the embedding layer, we have very high causal effect, that the model starts to think that the square to the left of the green square is actually blue and not red.
Right from layer zero.
Right from layer zero.
Right from layer zero, it says the incorrect answer.
Yes. One second. But if we do the patching on the square tokens only, not the entire strip, we don't see that effect. The model still thinks that the red is the correct answer and not the blue, if we do patching only on the square token. So, wait, what, shit. Okay, so if you think of these two results combinedly, what that means is there is a causal effect associated with the background tokens. If you don't touch the background tokens, the model does not really have enough causal effect to be able to change the final output. So essentially what that means is that entire strip has ordering information which is causal in nature. It is not only just there.
Which is causally relevant to its accuracy, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Question.
Yes, I wanted to ask what you patch.
What do I patch?
And as I understand later, is that you patch the whole street.
We do two kinds. We either patch the square or we patch the entire strip.
And when you patch the square, is it all the four?
Yes, it's only those four. And when we patch the strip, it's those four plus all the background tokens as in that strip.
Like earlier, I wasn't so convinced.
This is more convincing.
Maybe we should.
Question?
Yeah.
Maybe just a platform patch. Correct number of tokens.
Your internet connection is unstable.
No,
Pardon me.
I had a question about instead of patching the whole script, whole strip, if you just patch that red square but onto a different position on that first column, so you're essentially changing the position of the square.
Yeah, I
I
think
don't know,
we
this
have.
is an annoying question,
No, I
like,
think
yeah,
that's
but
not annoying.
what?
That's a good question. We have
Yeah.
that experiment in one of our later slides. I'm gonna show that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
can we look at the graphs in the meantime, or if people ask questions?
When you do the patches with the red, the icon one side to the other, is the positional encoding embedded in those tokens when you drink? Like, is it like. It appears to have the same position encodings of having been on the right side and it's swapped over, or is it the positional encoding? It's given the same position encoding as if it was on the left side. Does that question make sense? Because
No,
I guess,
yeah.
like, from.
Maybe what do you mean by position?
Because
Yeah.
I think the previous discussion about the probing was like, oh, like maybe like. The ordering is just comes from like the positional encoding that you give the tokens
Okay.
before it enters on the stuff. And I guess what I'm worried about is like is the tokens, do they contain that relative position encoding when you swap, when you do the matching? Is that a question?
So it's almost an architectural question you're asking
Yeah.
because for some transformer implementations, the position encoding is directly added into the vectors, and in other transformer representations, the positional encoding is never materialized. It's just implicitly added as part of attention later on. And so I think you're asking, oh, when you patch over, are you patching over from are you patching vectors where the positional encoding has already been added, or are you patching over vectors where the positional encoding has not been added yet? And it'll be added after you've done the patch.
So that's the question.
Yeah, that's
So
the
the
question.
answer for that is, so even in the VIT, the vision encoder, there is positional information.
You
And
mean where? In before you patch or after you patch?
at each
Before it goes
before
into the language model, that's
yeah.
what you mean.
Right, before you patch. Yeah, before I
So
patch.
it's more
There is rope
precise.
there in the vision encoder as well. So technically it has access to that positional information.
Okay.
And the other thing is here I'm showing not only the result of the embedding layer, I'm showing the result across bunch of layers in the language model. So even in the language model, there is rope.
Okay.
So it has access to both those position information.
You guys might clarify the question a little bit. So I feel like because transformer is permutation invariant,
Yeah.
there's no way like the model is able to figure out this test without position coding.
Yes.
So the question is more like how like these models position coding, whether it's just like hard coded at position or actually learning a generative notion of like finding like object relative associations with like the relative distance. It's more like how they're using
Yeah, I
position
think that's a
codes.
good question. I think before we ran some results a few weeks back, my understanding was it's the second thing. The models are creating some form of like abstract relative positional information to actually do the binding. And that's what we have seen in most of the result in the language model space. But I think I have a few results in some of the later slides where this ordering ID business in the vision encoder seems a bit more complex, a bit more complicated. It's not only those relative abstract positional information, but the model seems to be encoding some form of absolute positional information as well.
Well, even they're using rope, 2D rope.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
It's also, at least my intuition is that it's easier for language models specifically to get this like idea of positional encoding, specifically because of the auto mass. Like you don't even need any like rope, but you can just do language modeling without any positional encoding, and it works because of the mass. It's another like extra signal that we have.
Yeah, so that's like one of the evidences that you can use to say that the models can create, or at least the language models can create more abstract, sort of like positional information in its internal representation.
The depth of the vision encoder, you can also say that because it doesn't have this color masking, it could generate this script-like
Yeah.
structure. Otherwise, each token can only see
The
all
one
the
before it.
tokens before.
Yeah, I think rope still allows it to do it, but I just mean that for language models, it's like more of an inductive bias.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. About the causal experiment. What if the information is just spread not only in this in the street, but it just spread all over the image, and you need to change enough content in order to the language model, because the information is all around, not only with the script. And you make the experiment only with the script, so this is what we see.
We need a base.
But
Yeah.
maybe if you just have patch of enough how to call it
Content.
yeah, so the, I think I would say that. I mean, yeah, you can just take a few tokens around the square token, and maybe if you patch that, it might work. That's okay, but I think the probing results show that the result is diffused across the strip. So I think it becomes more methodological to patch the entire strip.
Because there is no vulnerability, various in the data set, like all the squares are in the same position. So
I think
if there was
I think it'd be nice.
variability in the
Yeah.
y-axis, it would not be.
Yeah, either training the probe with
But
yeah.
that becomes more easier thing. So if I would have trained it across a bunch of different squares in like different positions of the y-axis, then it becomes much more expected that okay, you will see the strip. But now that we are only training it on just one position, and even then we are seeing the effect on the entire strip, I think that's more surprising.
The probe, it's much easier for the probe to take into account only the x, x, because it's always the same place. In the y, it's always in the same place, so the probe doesn't need the information of the y-x.
Okay.
Think a nice baseline would be to do the fetching experiment with a strip or whatever, like that has the exact same number of tokens as in the original strip experiment, but like shaped otherwise. Like it can be, I don't know, instead of horizontal vertical, it can be a diagonal, it can be a square over the square, but the same number of tokens.
Random number
Or
of
also a random number.
And what will that tell us?
That it's not just of the portion of image information that you took for doing the fetching, but it's exactly that like structure inside the
Okay,
token.
as a baseline, maybe you can use it. Okay.
Nikhil, I have like a technical question in this talk suggestion. So technical question is like if these are four tokens in your X square and you are giving the top two and the bottom one, right? Like in the red square of the first top. So the two tokens from top and two tokens from bottom. So like a good neural network should learn that, okay, anything that is like stacked on top of like these tokens should be in like class one. So like, let's say the Rohit Shengyu probe was just trained on this and that, like only these two cases but different colors.
Okay.
Same probe,
Okay.
same positions, don't
Yeah.
do
No
anything.
changes in position.
So if my hypothesis is correct, then you should see only the like this the position that you're seeing only like in a L shape.
In a L shape, yes.
Yeah, because
yes.
The first
yeah, the first yeah, come from yeah, the yeah.
So that tells it's probably not positional embedding. It's something, sorry, probably not ordering representation. It's more positional embedding. If you don't see it, if you still see this happening, like where you're seeing like all these entire columns coming out to be in the test, if you're seeing the same structure, then maybe I'll be more convinced that it's like it's an ordering error.
So if it is L,
if it's,
yeah,
then I think just positional embedding.
Then it is just like absolute, it is encoding learning x and y coordinates.
Yeah.
It is learning x and y coordinates.
Right?
Okay.
Because
okay.
Like the other problem, when you still see, you have a different arrangement of the image, you still see the street in like the same location as the original composite.
Yeah.
So that's the overfit to the XY coordinate.
Yeah.
But you do see some generalization closer to the object. So it's a mix. It's a mix of.
So I, that, like, I have another counterpoint for you. Like, it's probably like this is a square, like a square representation.
Right. But it does,
I don't know.
But it does know.
It's like a square.
To extract the order from the square.
Yeah.
So it knows, okay, oh, this is a background and I actually need to, in the background, I need to overfit to the XY.
Yeah.
But if I have a square, then suddenly I have more information.
Yeah.
And that's the information it uses. So there is some information of the square that is relevant to the patient.
Okay, so that makes sense. And like, it'd be nice like if it's like slightly more stronger.
Yeah.
Also, second thing is when you do patching from your entire white slab, so this is again autoregressive in language space, correct? All these tokens. So the bottom token of red probably already knows it comes from the column of the red token. But the top white patch might not know. No, wait, it still knows because it comes from this algorithm.
Yeah. No, that.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah. Okay. Anyways, I think it's.
Shaquille. Practical question.
Yeah.
How many more slides do you have?
I think that's one of the main reasons.
That's good.
No, actually, there's one more main other thing.
Want to zoom to the other main result?
So, should I take 5 more minutes?
Sure.
Okay. So, those are the results for showing that the vision encoder already encodes this ordering information of the squares, even before the language model gets into the picture. So then, what's the question is, what is language model doing? Is it just using that piece of information, or does it create its own set of like ordering information, or what is happening? So to answer that question, we did another patching experiment. Here, the idea is to basically ablate out or remove all the ordering information from an encoder. So the way we do that is like we create a synthetic image, like a representation of a synthetic image, where the representation of each square is taken from the like a different image with the same square placed in the middle, and that's the only square. So the idea here is, if the model is encoding that this is the first square, second square, third square, then if we just take their representation from a single square image, then the representation of each square should just be saying that, okay, I'm the first one. And we also patch in the activations of the background tokens to destroy the information in those background tokens. Okay, so if we do that patching, the ordering information from the vision encoder should get destroyed. And if you do that, the behavioral performance decreases. It decreases significantly, which is kind of expected. But the point here is, it still is above the chance. Chance is 33%. It's not near 33%. So that means language model does seem to do something. So then we check if the models or the language model has created its own like ordering information or not by just doing the same piece of experiment. But now the ordering information from the vision encoder are destroyed. And then in this experiment, we only need to do the patching on the squares. We don't need to do the patching on the entire strip. And it's the same experiment, and this is the result. What this shows is, even the language model does seem to create its own ordering information in some of its middle layers. So that's...
So the x-axis in the previous experiment was layers of the vision encoder, and then the x-axis...
No, this is both language...
Both the previous experiment and this experiment, but they're both language model.
Yes, layers. Language model backbone. There we saw the effect right from the start.
Okay.
Because the information was provided by the vision encoder itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the input of the language model backbone already had the information.
I see.
But here, that information is not present. So we only see the alignment only in the middle-ish layer of the language model backbone.
I understand.
It is much more similar to the first example with the upper layers in box A. This is the mechanism that drives that.
Right.
Behavior. So it's
the
same
language model finding.
Yeah.
But is this a language model dealing with the tokens, the language tokens, or is this a language model dealing with the spatial token information? Like you're saying that there's some transformation of that representation which also exists in the LM backbone.
It's the second one. And I'm not sure about the transformation. Transformation occurs before the LLM backbone, which is done by the projector.
So it's just like it's retaining some information, but from the vision model, but in the LM space as well. The spatial information from the pictures, from the images are retained in the LM space as well.
So that's the general claim, that the vision encoder is encoding the ordering information. But let's say if you get rid of that information coming from the vision encoder, the language model also... generates its own ordering information.
Got it. And but the information generated by the language model is pertaining to the spatial information, right? This is not from the language tokens. This is again like related to the spatial
Exactly.
Spatial. Okay.
We are operating on the visual token.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's the second main result, that even the language model does seem to create its own ordering information.
Yes. A little bit better left to right than it is up and down.
Yes, that is right. That is right.
I had a very quick question regarding this. So is the assumption that the LLM does this because you are basically preventing the vision bridge from doing that? Or do you think that they both do this? Right? Because I think you could validate this by doing the patching of the original LLM states while you're not patching the vision encoder. These LLM states in the vision encoder to test whether the LLM is having a compensatory behavior, right, or not.
Second?
Yeah, I did not follow the experiment.
Yeah, so kind of like right now you're patching the vision, right? So you know that in the vision there's nothing going on in terms of positions, but now you're wondering, are these results from the LLM emerging because the LLM is compensating from the lack of positional information, or are there also before? Right?
Yes.
So then you could try to get the original activations from the previous LLM and patch them over the current ones, mm-hmm. while also patching the vision part, right? So if the previous LLM where the vision was normal was not doing this because it's so kind of like, oh, the vision part is already handling this, so I don't have to do it. Now you would see that basically patching both would cause like the performance to go to zero or something like that, right?
I'm still not 100% sure. If you patch in, yeah, I think we can talk about it. It's not very simple thing to do.
Yes.
But I think that's a good question. Here, what we are arguing is, it is the second case, I think what you said, that both of them are happening simultaneously.
Right.
Okay. It's not the case, like it's not just the case that the language model mechanism comes into the picture only when the information from the vision encoder is updated. I think
right.
It is there in normal cases as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we have not done very thorough experiment for that. Mm-hmm. I think the argument that we are using is You see the result for the below and above here? Slightly growing. And we say that that growing part is coming from the language model ordering ID.
Makes sense.
But maybe we can talk about
Yeah,
their
sure.
experiment later. So yes.
I
What?
didn't understand. Why did you have 60? Not here, sorry. Here. The next one?
This one?
Next one, next one.
Next one?
No, you had like.
Had what?
Keep going. Keep going.
It's actually not an intervention of yours. It's actually a probability. The probability to say red or the probability to say blue.
So it adds up to one. I don't see it adding up
It
to one.
may not add to one. I
Oh, you
mean,
might, yeah.
this is
Sorry.
distributed. Yeah. We did not do a softmax on color tokens. We've just take the probability of this particular color. It may not add to one.
We can talk
But
later.
so this is just the most simple thing. You make the model, you have the vocabulary distribution, all the logic, pick the logic of the red, pick the logic of the blue.
Yeah.
But there's also another 50,000 tokens
Yeah.
on that kind of
They
correct.
would have some logic, right? Logic value.
Okay.
So it might not add to one. The color logic of blue and logic of red might, it should
I
be
thought it
close to
said
one, but it may not be exactly one.
red, why?
Then
It
what are,
said
why is it
banana.
0 to 1? Like the scale, why is it 0 to 1 if it's just logic?
It's probability.
Was average probability.
You do the softmax first, then you read off the probabilities corresponding to the literal token red and the literal token blue, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, the AI was incorrect. But I think the result will still hold. Yeah.
Same trend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to quickly show that it's really.
Okay, so the main, yeah, so I think that's the one of the main argument that both vision encoder and the language model are creating or forming this ordering information, which is being used to do spatial reasoning task in vision VLM. And then we use this insight to improve the performance of one of the models on a benchmark called WhatsApp, which is okay, I think. Yeah, we were able to improve the performance significantly better than just using a random baseline, which is just to pick up random directions.
Significant, I
I
think
mean, yeah, it depends how what you call it,
like
significance.
15 to 50 is that the jump unit?
So read this number, I think. The original model performance was 90%.
Okay.
And then
Oh,
we got it till 95. Yeah, that was. But this is unsupervised. We don't need any supervision. You can do it on any model in any image. All you need to do is just train these probes, which is sort of should figure out whether it's the first object, second object, or third object in the image, and that's it. And you can you use those probes as a steering vector.
oh.
That's all.
What's the difference? What's the difference between the accuracy and the percent corrected failure? Because the percent corrected failure seems like really huge, right? Improvements in both cases. I mean,
Yeah, so
much higher.
this is 90%, so 10% are incorrect. Among those 10%, we are able to fix 50%.
Among, yeah.
Yeah.
How many of the incorrect answer we were able to?
Flip, yeah, to correct.
Okay.
Let's repeat that with a weekend.
So these results are on the non-synthetic images,
Yeah,
right?
what's up?
And the probe was also trained on
Yeah,
non-synthetic.
yeah,
Do
you know how much when 2.5 would do on that data set? Like you did 8 billion, right? Or 7 billion, I think. Okay.
Okay, so one more piece of experiment which we have not put into the paper, but I've been doing it in the past few weeks, is something that that has come into the discussion as well, which is okay, so in the language model space, previous works has shown that this ordering information is encoding the relative positional information. Something like this is the first object, this is the first box. So we ask the same question for the ordering information generated by the vision encoder. Now that we know that vision encoder also generate these kinds of information. So for that, we also did causal experiment with slightly different task. So this is the task. Two differences that you should notice. First, in the image, the squares are a little bit. It's not equally spread. The squares are actually shifted towards left-hand side in this particular case. And the question that we ask is, the color of the leftmost square is, and the answer should give us green. And we do patching experiments again. And this is the counterfactual sample, which you can think of it as like just a mirror image of your clean image. One important point is the exact XY coordinate of this blue square is the same between these two sample. Okay. Okay, and then we basically take the we pass the strip from this particular area region to this particular region and this particular strip to this particular strip. Okay, now there are two hypotheses, whether the model is forming relative or whether the model is forming absolute position information. If it is forming relative position information, this is what would happen. Here it will say that this is the first square. So after patching, this blue square will become the first square and this green square will become the third square. Okay. So the answer to this question will change from green to blue if it is relative. Now, the rationale for absolute is something like this. Let's say it is not encoding first, second, or third, it is encoding 3.1, 3, 3,1, 3,2, 3,3. And this would be 3,3, 3,4, 3,5. Okay. So after we do the batching, this green will become 3,5. The brown will remain 3,2. And the blue will remain 3,3. So we have 3,5, 3,2, 3,3. After the patching, if we are assuming absolute position. So then the leftmost square should be 3,2, the brown one. That's why the expected color after the intervention, if the position information is encoding the absolute one, it's the brown one. That's a little bit different. Does it make sense? Okay. So this is the result if you do the patching of just the vision embeddings, vision token embeddings. We see that, and this is probability. It is sort of like, yeah, like distributed equally between brown and blue. And that's why I say, and this is only for this clean images shifted towards left, but the same like similar results also holds when the squares in the clean images are actually shifted towards right or top or top bottom. And that's why I think what I think in the vision encoder, it's not that clear as what we have seen in the language model space, which where we have seen that the model clearly uses this relative position information. But in the vision space, I think it seems to be encoding both this kind of like absolute and relative position.
If you say absolute, it's the color or something else?
When I say absolute, I mean coordinate, like three, like x comma y. And when I say relative, I mean a bit more abstract. It's like first object, sorry, first square or the second square or the third square.
Can you repeat what you mean by absolute?
Just the coordinates, x comma y.
But you're also patching the white space from much earlier, right?
We are patching the white
Like the
space.
blue on the right side, you're also patching the first column tokens. They might have a different relative position.
They might have a. So I think we went with the assumption that the strip has
The entire strip will always encode everything blue.
Yeah. This
That
is what we.
it made sense when you're doing probes, the exact because they're all equidistant. Maybe you should also do probes here and play with it.
We did probe for other arrangements. We saw that it's always distributing them according to the location. So even if you shift everything, the strip will shift. Or if you have like now three and one, you have like a kind of almost a rectangle, rectangle stripe. Always distribute them.
Bum was right. I think that, so I don't know if it'll work, but I think that there are like naive things that you could do to scramble it even further to have a totally dead fish. You could say things like, we're going to just do
White.
a Fisher Yates shuffle of all the patches, right? So that, you know, they're white anyway. You say, oh, I'll patch white. I know that white has a lot of positional stuff in it. What about we'll just shuffle all the patches? You know, they don't have any information anyway.
If the ham and egg was just going to scramble it, it's gone, right? And then just put in exactly that, this featureless red thing, this featureless blue thing, on a scrambled, field of shuffled white. And then if your model can still tell what's what, then I'm like, then that, to me, that's more convincing. Now this is a language model, like
And
a
I
vision
think
model is
if
not
you
doing
do
it.
that, maybe your brown accuracy would go up.
Wait, so you're saying that what we see here is a lot of the effect of actually the white background encoding
It could
information.
be. It could be
Yeah,
things like
things.
that. Yeah, it could be. And so we could too. I believe your language wants to do something.
Wait.
So you think that if
I'm okay.
that will be more absolute and relative?
Then I think you wouldn't get like this confusion between brown and blue. I think one of it would stand out.
I think actually the hypothesis is that it will be more blue, more relative. Because with the generalization of the problem, we saw that the white background is basically an overfit to the X-ray probably might be an overfit to the X-ray problem.
So like,
That's very interesting.
is
It's
there
very interesting work. And it's, so as you know, I think that you're getting a little preview of your review process. It's going through review right now. I
We
think
actually
that,
got really nice review for the workshop.
oh
I
yeah,
mean, that was workshop.
huh?
Yeah.
But it's good.
Preview.
I think it's really interesting work. I think that a lot of your sort of what you like sort of your appendix experiments are very strong. I think that your stuff is very defensible, but
Yeah.
you'll have to gird yourself for review. Depending on your reviewers,
And
you might have to
yeah.
present a lot of extra data to them.
And also, we need to give credit to Kelly, who is the master's student program.
Yeah,
I
yeah,
met
yeah,
her
yeah.
and also helped some of
That's
the
great.
experiments.
So
Yeah.
in your talk, by the way, you make claim, but then you nail the point later. You
Okay.
should keep that, like, is it this? And then you nail it
Yeah,
with
nail
claim.
it. Yeah, I've given you that feedback. Yeah. You tend to like take you sort of show things in the front instead of impressing people at the end. You can impress them later when
Like, for instance, you showed probe and you said it's diffused across all tokens. Like, if no McIntyre researcher would trust by probe, but you know the answer, like, you did causal experiments, you should show the causal experiment and say, wow, this is surprising. Then I'll be like, yeah, it is surprising.
So you should say, yeah, when you show the probe, say, well, I don't believe this.
Yeah,
You should
you
be
should do that.
skeptical about
Yeah,
your
yeah.
own thing.
You should
Yeah,
be in the
so
mind of us. You should do that.
this, yeah, okay, but
I think I wouldn't even, like, if you make a present, I wouldn't even show the proven results. Maybe just later for the steering. But then how do you come with the
okay, I think you can
hypothesis?
show it. You
How
can
did you
show
come
it.
with the hypothesis of the... Actually,
Okay.
for me, the thing I learned from this project is probes are actually not that bad. Like,
Oh,
they're not causal evidence, but they can help
okay.
us. They can help
Okay.
us hypothesize.
I agree, but why did you even
When
but
Nikhil
why
suggested doing
yeah.
probe, I was like, no, we're not doing probe. And then he kept saying that for a couple of weeks, and then I was like, okay, do probes, like whatever, okay. And then we were able to
Yeah.
actually construct really nice causal experiments because of the
Because
probe.
of the probe,
Yeah.
I see. But why did you even probe the tokens that are not there, that position?
Because when
Bug.
No.
Bug. Yeah.
It wasn't actually bug because things were not working. When we did not include those additional tokens, which is what generally you would do. You would only work with the square tokens.
You could go through this, you can tell the same story but with causality. I'm not saying change your story, just that I think it would be for me simpler
So I
if you
think
start
so.
with
I think that depends on the format as well. If I was giving like a formal talk, then I would have definitely said that. But then, as soon as I started saying result, people started ask a question. So.
claimed it. You claimed it, and we were like, oh, I don't know. This could be that, this could be this. And then you showed causal, and I'm like, convinced. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, when you're starting out, when you presented your problem statement, and you had a couple of results showing, like, a preliminary, like, is there even something there for me to search for? Which is kind of what it gives you. It's like, gives you, like, okay, there's actually something there that I can actually look at. Like, I'm not totally opposed to, like, showing those results of, like, okay, there's actually something going on. And then nailing the
And
poll.
that's if
you can
the
also say, like, when you show the problems, you can say, don't worry, I have causal experiments later on. This is just like
Okay,
feedback.
okay.
Or even if it's just to make the point, probes can help us think about what kind of causal
Yeah.
experiments we want to make. If this is a point you want to promote, then yeah,
Do
I would
we?
say that's
I
what
think we
I'm
could. I think that is one of the things that I've learned in the project, but I don't think so. We are doing that right now. But yeah, I think we could do that.
By the way, I like your first slides, right?
Me too.
Your first, three, four, five slides. They were fantastic. I don't know what happened. They just came.
I wanted your advice to make those slides.
Thank you very much.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
A very sweet way to make